11,206. The S&P gaining 10. The NASDAQ picking up 24. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and this is our special Election Day broadcast. I mentioned this last week on the program and maybe even a little bit before that, but of course today is Election Day across the country, and a very interesting Election Day, probably one of the most interesting that we've had in some time, certainly in the midterm elections. There's a lot taking place. Of course, we've got a lot of things happening. We won't be talking about any of the results or any of those types of things today, of course, because those results are just coming in, or, you know, all the polls are still open. So even with the exit polling and all that, that data really wouldn't be of any value to us at this point in time. I would say, though, tomorrow, on tomorrow's broadcast, we will be speaking with some folks from World Magazine. Edward Lee Pitts will be with me from World Magazine. He's the Washington correspondent for World Magazine, and he'll be with me on the program. And I'll also be talking to some folks from the American Enterprise Institute and getting their take on some of the election results as well. John Fortner is going to be with me tomorrow, and we'll be talking with him about some of the results and just getting a number of different perspectives about what took place here today on Election Day. I'm not sure that all of the answers will be in tomorrow. There still may be some races that will be up in the air, but I think for the most part we'll have a pretty good picture of what is taking place. So there's two broadcasts related to the election that I think you can look forward to. On today's broadcast, we're looking at a very interesting book that has come out here just recently. The book is termed, the title of it is called Republocrat, and that's an obvious play on both Republican and Democrat. The subtitle of it is Confessions of a Liberal Conservative, and it's written by Carl Truman. And Carl Truman, a lot of folks in our listening audience would probably be very much familiar with him. He blogs quite often out there at Reformation 21. Carl is the professor of historical theology and church history at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia. And this book has been quite provocative. A couple of quotes that I find right on the book is one by Michael Horton. Dr. Horton's been with us a few times on the program talking about his book, but he says, "It will delight, frustrate, and encourage healthy discussion that we have needed to have for a long time." The introduction of this book, or the foreword, I should say. The foreword is written by none other than Peter Lilback. Dr. Lilback's been with me on the program talking about his book, The Wall of Misconception, and I think we've actually had him on a couple of times. And it's kind of interesting that Peter Lilback would write the foreword for this book because, if I understand both men correctly in their writings, he comes from a completely different perspective. So right away, even in the endorsements, I think you can see that it's quite a controversial book. I've read and listened to a few of the interviews that Dr. Truman has done on this book, and read the comments that were made by Kevin DeYoung, DeYoung out at the Gospel Coalition, and Kevin DeYoung gave parts of the book a favorable report, and other parts he took issue with. So as we can see, within the Christian community, I think there's a lot of discussion about some of the things that are mentioned in the book. So I thought this would be a great discussion for us to have on air today. Let me tell you, in the listening audience, first and foremost, that you are certainly welcomed and encouraged to take part in our discussion today. We've set up a toll-free number. It's good across the country for you to be able to do that. So as we go through the broadcast, you are certainly welcome to dial that toll-free number, and we'll be happy to take your question or your comment on the subject. Try to keep it at least on the subject that we're talking about would make it easier if you can, you know, the particular point that we're at during that time, and then be happy to try to work your question or comment into our discussion. Let me give you that number. That number is 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. I also have email up and running, so if you're not at a place where you can make that phone call and call in that way, you can certainly send me an email with a brief statement with your question or comment. My email address is very simple. It's just kevin@knowingthetruth.org. That's K-E-V-I-N at knowingthetruth, all one word, .org, and I'll be happy to work your question or comment into our discussion that way. I'm going to start up Twitter here in just a moment, so I have Twitter up, and the account on Twitter is Knowing the Truth, and so you can send a tweet as well if you have a comment, and I'll be trying to tweet a few of the statements that we're making as we go along in the discussion as well. With that, let me go ahead and say, Dr. Truman, welcome into the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
Thanks very much, Kevin. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Great. I wanted to start off with the stated purpose of your book. Right in the very beginning, you mentioned that a statement about young people particularly, I think, let me quote this right out of the introduction. It says, "The primary reason why I agreed to write this book is my belief that the evangelical church in America is in danger of alienating a significant section of its people, particularly young people, through too tight a connection between conservative party politics and Christian fidelity." Would you expound on that statement just a little bit? Do you really feel that this is that big of an issue, and do you really think that it's having that big of a negative impact on young people in the church today?
I would certainly say that my experience of the students at the seminary where I teach, Westminster, would lead me to believe that there is a rift emerging, a generational rift emerging. I think it works on two levels. One, I think a number of the students that I talk to are disillusioned with the very strict party way that politics is being discussed. Obviously, when you go into the voting booth, you have to vote your conscience, and you've got to vote for one party or another. But I think that political engagement and thinking, particularly for Christians, needs to be informed and to take place, at least initially, outside of the framework of party politics. The second area where I think I pick up significant disillusionment among younger people is the idioms that Christians use to articulate their political positions, which are often on both sides. This is not a criticism of either the right or the left individually. It's a criticism of both sides. But often the idiom used is very extreme, very incivil in its approach, and very personalized and negative. Mm-hmm. You alluded in your introduction to getting Pete Lill back to write my introduction. Mm-hmm. I did that deliberately. Pete's a very good friend of mine. Respect him a lot. He's obviously my boss. And I wanted the book itself to model a kind of engagement between people who might disagree about certain significant political issues, yet can do so in a way that doesn't damage or disrupt mutual respect or friendship.
Mm.
So those two areas, I think the very strong partisan way that politics plays out, and the rather unfortunate and, one might say, very impolite nature of political discourse across the spectrum today, I think is really turning a lot of people off.
Mm-hmm. So more of the civility discussion, that the way that it's carried about. I had Oz Guinness on the program. He wrote a book about civility, and we talked about, we're basically talking about we don't need to be name-calling. For instance, in an issue like homosexuality, for the Christians to be involved in, if the only argument that they raise is that it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and these type of derogatory comments, that's not going to do any good. It doesn't do any good in the political debate. It certainly doesn't do any good in a representation of what Christians believe and who we are. Is that the type of thing that you're talking about?
Yes. I mean, Paul, the New Testament makes it very clear that we should have some pretty strong convictions on a whole host of moral and ethical issues. But the New Testament also teaches us, you know, when people throw abuse at you, speak kindly to them. Don't allow the methods, the techniques, the idioms of the world to determine the weapons that we use in our struggles. I would never want a Christian to compromise their strongly held beliefs, but I would want to distance myself from those who behave in a very, I would say, curmudgeonly unpleasant and ill-mannered way in the public sphere. I think that's counterproductive. I think it leads to dramatic and sometimes unnecessary polarization, and it is not helpful in the public square. Mm-hmm. The fact that our opponents may use these techniques is no justification for us using them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take that as a given. I think many Christians realize this. I do think that there's abuses to it, no doubt about it. But let's take that as a given.
Yeah.
We should all speak more kindly in our political debates. If that, though, wasn't the main purpose in writing this, right? Because otherwise the tagline wouldn't be Confessions of a Liberal Conservative. So where do you go beyond that? Beyond just the civil discourse?
Well, I would say there are certain issues on which I would argue the Christian position is very clear. For example, abortion. I don't think one can be a consistent Christian and be pro-abortion. I think that is incompatible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a whole host of political and social issues where Christians can differ, where there is no obvious Christian position. Take a trivial example. Is the biblical position on income tax, is it 20% or 25%? I don't think that there is a hard and fast Christian position on that. I think the debates about government health care that are often cast in Christian circles in very stark polarities, well, if you're a Christian, you have to hold to government health care or you have to oppose government health care. I don't think that the Bible actually speaks directly to those issues.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that there is much more wisdom and culture involved in political decisions and opinions like that than, say, in a matter like abortion. And what it seems to be happening at the moment in churches is this: people are getting very, very black and white about areas where I don't think the Bible is quite so black and white. The next level of that, of course, is that it leads to a form of social gospel.
Mm-hmm.
We start to identify the gospel with certain political and social positions. Historically, that has been the era of the left. Most of your listeners will be familiar with the problems of the left-wing social gospel.
Mm-hmm.
We could also see the development of a right-wing social gospel as well, and that would be no more biblical. The church's role is primarily to preach the gospel of the death, resurrection, and ascension of the Lord Jesus Christ. Political issues should operate at a very different level for Christians.
That's a very interesting point and something that I want to ask you about, you know, the role of the preacher. I heard your interview on Janet Medford that follows this radio program as well, and so I want to talk about that. But before we do, let me go to the phone line. We've got Stan from Florida calling in. Stan, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
How you doing today?
Doing great. How about yourself?
God bless. I would like to say that I'm a minister of the gospel, and I see a lot of things. But one thing that I see, a candidate can say, hey, I'm a Christian. Then all us Christians vote for him because he's against abortion and homosexuality, which I'm against. Mm-hmm. But then he'll turn right around and say there are many ways to heaven. I don't believe there are many ways to heaven. There's one way to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
What qualifies a person to be a Christian? Just because he's against abortion? Just because he's against homosexuality? But what qualifies a person to be a Christian is to believe in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven. There are not many ways to heaven. Allah's not the way, Buddha's not the way, Mary's not the way, but I want to say that Jesus Christ is the way.
Well, Stan, I think...
So you can't call yourself a Christian if you say there are many ways to heaven.
Well, yeah.
Barack Obama said that, John McCain said that, George Bush said that. And I can't call him a Christian.
Well, that's a good point, Stan. Let me go ahead and frame that in the form of a question for our guest. I'm going to let you go ahead and take the answer off air so you can hear his answer. But also I want to tell you that if you send me an email to kevin@knowingthetruth.org, that's kevin@knowingthetruth.org, the good folks from P&R Publishing will send you out a copy of this book that we're talking about today, and absolutely free of charge. So thank you, Stan, for your comment. I really appreciate it. Okay, Stan's gone. Okay, so Carl, Stan's talking about, you know, we get these politicians who, you talk about this in your book too, you talk about it in terms of where they'll say that they are pro-life, and they use these things sometimes just as ways of getting to a certain demographic of their constituency, trying to get the vote from the Christian community. But you encourage in your book that we should look deeper when they say these things to see if they really have a real conviction about these points. Is that correct?
Yes, I think when Christians go into the voting booth, as I've already said, you've got to vote for one party or the other, one candidate or the other. But do your research before you do that. Just because somebody is using, say, the rhetoric of being pro-life, you can check somebody's voting record. You can see how seriously they've taken that, or whether it's just a flag of convenience they happen to fly every 4 or 6 years in order to garner some votes. Mm-hmm. So I would certainly encourage Christians to be as well informed as they can be about the voting records of their candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't agree more with Stan on his statement about Jesus Christ as the way of salvation. Preach it, brother, would be my response to that.
Amen. And, you know, but that brings up a bigger question. You know, sometimes people are looking at these candidates as almost that they're voting for a pastor, not that they're voting for a public official. And so they assume that, they get a person like George Bush, and because he says that he has a conversion to Christianity in his particular case, he talks about being an alcoholic and these types of things, and then turning to Christ. And then they assume from that I think they hold him to a standard where they assume that all of his theology is going to be straight as well.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid we may be looking for too much in these people. I don't vote for them to be my pastor. I'm voting for them to make wise decisions about government. How should people think about those types of things?
I think the way you think about it is the correct one. The New Testament makes it very clear that the role of government is different to the role of the church. I think the civil magistrate, if you look at Romans 13, for example, his job is to protect the innocent. That's fundamental to what the civil magistrate is meant to do. And I think when we cast our votes, we're not... I'm a Presbyterian. I'm not going to put the candidate through a presbytery exam before I can vote for them. I'm going to make a judgment based on what I know about the candidate, about his what he says he's going to do, his voting record in the past, as to whether this is the best person to protect the innocent in society. I don't expect him to be a great preacher of the gospel, but I do expect him to be somebody who will fulfill the mandate of the civil sphere, if you like. Government is created by God. Not all governors have to be Christians, but they are required to protect the innocent. So I would make my judgment not on whether somebody says they're a Christian or not, but whether somebody has the policies that I think are going to protect the most vulnerable members of society and the interests of the nation as a whole, if one could put it that way.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we seem to get into more trouble when they do speak about more theological things. They make statements that we then find ourselves having to clarify or, I don't know, just distance ourselves from. A lot of times it causes more harm than good. Do you find the same?
Yes. I would say that there's a very good reason why these people are running for government and they're not pastors, and that is that they would be utterly incompetent as pastors. So it's better to keep them off in the government than to allow them in the pulpit of your church.
Yeah. Now, you use a term in your book. The subtitle of the book is Confessions of a Liberal Conservative. But then you spend some time, a chapter or so, talking about that, well, when you say liberal, you're not talking about liberal like we use it today. You're talking about some old school type of liberalism, maybe even a liberalism that is people in the UK would be more familiar with than they would over here in the States. Do you think it would have been better not to use the term liberal if you have to go to so much effort to distance yourself from the word?
It may have sold a few more copies. certainly, my own view of a liberal is I suppose the old 19th century, early 20th century idea of somebody who believes in individual rights, and yet also believes that there is such a thing as society and that the government has a limited but significant role in protecting and helping the weakest and most vulnerable members of that society. Mm-hmm. So it would not be... Liberal today seems to me to be very wrapped up in identity politics issues of gender, sexuality, race, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. It's not that kind of liberalism that I identify with at all. And in fact, in chapter one of the book, I really take what I would consider to be the modern-day left to task as having essentially abandoned the most vulnerable and focused itself on what I would describe as middle-class identity politics and lobby groups.
Mm-hmm. In fact, when you mentioned the idea of liberalism in those terms, you just used a couple of statements there. You said individual rights, limited government, justice for the oppressed, this type of thing. Those are talking points in the GOP. Those are talking points in the current Tea Party. Wouldn't it have been better than to just say, you know, identify with where the movement is going? Even today, we see that these things, where they're coming against both right and left, there's been a repudiation of the, you know, the Christian right per se, and just allowing the church to be in the hip pocket of the GOP. There's been a firm repudiation of leftist thinking, you know, more of a socialistic movement going that way. Wouldn't it have been better than just to use the term, you know, that I'm for the current movement that's taking place, limited government, individual rights, justice for the oppressed?
Perhaps, although, of course, limited government for an Englishman means something different, I think, to what it often means for an American. So my view of limited government might be that government is still somewhat more extensive than members of the Tea Party would think. So I'm aware that there's a cultural difference there. The second thing I think about the current trends is it's not obvious to me as an outside observer exactly where groups like the Tea Party are going. They seem to be very, very interesting coalitions. So I'll reserve judgment on that as a good historian until the story's over.
Yeah.
The third thing is one or two reviewers have actually said, you know, Truman's much more conservative than he likes to think he is. So maybe I should accept that and go back and think about, well, maybe I'm not quite as progressive as I like to think I am. That's possibly a valid criticism.
Well, It's a little bit like me. I'm a pastor of a Bible church, and the Presbyterians think that I'm Baptist, and the Baptists accuse me of being Presbyterian. And so I get it from both sides. And I
like you already.
I'm sorry I interrupted you, though. You were going to finish your thought.
I was going to say that I do think there's the cultural nature of politics means that coming to America as a British person, I bring a whole different set of categories, mm-hmm. a whole different cultural history, which means that the certain debates get played out very, very differently here to what they do back home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also acutely aware that since the 18th century, British people commenting on American politics have not gone down very well over here.
No, it is called the Tea Party for a reason.
I appreciate that, yes.
There is a connection there. Well, we're going to continue our discussion and go through the book even more so here in just a minute. I want to make sure that I give people a good outline of what to expect in this book. But we have to take a very quick commercial break. When we come back from the break, we'll continue our discussion, and I'll let our listeners know how they can get a copy of this book. The book we're talking about is the book entitled Republicrat, Confessions of a Liberal Conservative by Carl R. Truman. The foreword is by Peter Lilbeck, as we were just talking about. The publisher is P&R Publishing. You can go out to their website at www.prpbooks.com in order to find out more. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about some more issues that are covered in this book, and I'll give you the numbers and the ways that you can be involved. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Would you please welcome the pride of Alexandria, Indiana, your host, Bill Gaither.
Hey, thanks, Bill, and welcome to Homecoming Radio. Do we ever have a great show for you?
The Gaither Homecoming Radio, heard every Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM. Brought to you by Dixie Family Restaurant on Wade Hampton Boulevard in Greenville.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Principled, honest, tough. Trey Gowdy, a family man, married his high school sweetheart, raising their kids right here in the upstate. A tough prosecutor dedicated to defending the American dream.
I'm Trey Gowdy. I approve this message because I'm a prosecutor, not a politician. I face down murderers, rapists, even death threats. That alone may not be enough to change Washington, but Washington will never change me.
Paid for by Trey Gowdy for Congress.
The Skid hit six games for the Citadel last Saturday at Wofford. This weekend, the Bulldogs continue their search for their first conference win as they play host to Elon for homecoming in the final game at Johnson Haygood Stadium this season. Join us for the Dogs and Phoenix this Saturday. Our pregame show opens at 12:30, kickoff at 2 on your home for Bulldogs football, Christian Talk 660.
Brought to you in part by Kia of Anderson and by Greer Flooring, Carolina Coaches, and Just Right Auto Repair.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. We're talking with Dr. Carl Truman. Dr. Truman is the professor of Historical Theology and Church History at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia. And he's written a very interesting book called Republicrat, Confessions of a Liberal Conservative. I have books to give away during the program today, so if you'd like a copy of this book, all you need to do in order to obtain a copy is participate in the program. We're looking for specifically your questions or comments for our special guest today, and you can do that in a number of ways. One, we have a toll-free number that's good across the country. It's 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535, and that's good, like I say, from coast to coast across the country, so be happy to take your question or your comment via the phone line. Secondly, we, of course, have email up and running. The email is kevin@knowingthetruth.org. That's kevin@knowingthetruth.org. And then third, I do have the Twitter account up and running, and the Twitter account is simply just Knowing the Truth. That's just Knowing the Truth, all one word. And you can go out there and just put in your question or comment in the form of a tweet, and I'll be happy to work it into our conversation that way. And then we'll make sure we put one of these books in your hands. Again, this book is published by P&R Publishing. Their website is www.prpbooks.com, and you can go out there to find out more about this book. Let's go back to our discussion now. Dr. Truman, in the beginning of your book, in the foreword, Peter Loback makes this statement that that one thing that he disagrees with or would, I think, ask further questions on would be the idea that he feel that there may be some straw men that are raised during the course of your discussion in the book. I think Kevin DeYoung, in his assessment of the book, he mentions the same thing. Part of that straw man mentality, obviously people know what a straw man is, but specifically the idea of Rupert Murdoch and Fox News and some of the statements that are made by Fox News, you seem to zero in on, you know, a Bill O'Reilly statement or on a Glenn Beck statement or something, and conclude that maybe people are buying into them too much, that, you know, people are just hanging on every word and these types of things. How would you answer that that criticism of the book?
I would say that it was very mischievous of my friend Peter to have made it. But I think I certainly accept that there are different kinds of conservatives out there. Mm-hmm. This book was written really, I serve effectively as an associate pastor at the church I attend in near Philadelphia. And this book was written in some ways as a book aimed at the kind of people that I'm meeting from the pews, if you like. I'm not dealing on the whole with strongly rarefied intellectual approaches to conservatism. Mm-hmm. Often when I'm out and about, I'm meeting Christians in the pew who get their basic information on the world from the Fox News network. Mm-hmm. What I try to do in the Fox News chapter, and I'm not sure that Peter and Kevin really picked up on this, was what I did was say, well, a lot of my Fox News friends, if you like, always play, when I talk about other news channels, always play the kind of conspiracy theory card. Yes, but those channels have their biases and they're out to kind of trick you or deceive you in this way. So what I did in the Fox News chapter was to say, well, okay, let's use these same criteria and look at the record of the owner of Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, on freedom of speech and democracy issues around the world. And let's look at some of the arguments put forward by some of the people who are generally accepted to be some of the most influential pundits in the American sphere today. And it's kind of ironic that Peter Lilbach, of course, wrote that introduction before he himself appeared on the Glenn Beck show. when Glenn Beck recommended Peter's book on George Washington, it shot to the top of the Amazon bestseller list. Mm-hmm. And I think the highest my book has been like 3,000 on Amazon. I think Peter's book months later is still around about the 150, 200 mark. Mm-hmm. So the idea that Glenn Beck is not a hugely influential person who can mobilize the sort of political conservative Christian base, mm-hmm. that's not a straw man at all. And I'm very grateful for Peter and his book proving that I wasn't addressing a straw man at that point. So I would respond by saying, sure, I appreciate there are some very sophisticated conservative thinkers and philosophers out there. I'm not addressing that kind of conservatism. I'm addressing a more populist and frankly, more electorally significant form, and that is those people who look to Fox News for their cue. And I would certainly want to stress, I have no problem with people watching Fox News and being influenced by Fox News. I watch it myself. What I would recommend that Christians do is make sure they get their news and information from a variety of sources, and not just televisual sources. I actually think the print medium, magazines and newspapers, can often provide more thoughtful commentary from a variety of different perspectives. And Christians really need to be reading widely and being as informed as possible about these issues.
Let me use that as a segue to make a plug for tomorrow's program. We'll be talking with the folks from World Magazine tomorrow, and that's a great resource. They don't buy into just one person's political perspective. They do present different viewpoints, and I think do it in a very fair way. I guess the point is that people, and I don't know if you understand the mood of the country or what they feel takes place on the cable news networks or not, but they feel that if you want to get the liberal democratic perspective, then you turn to CNN and you're going to get what the Democrats are, how they're spinning the story. In fact, they derogatorily used to refer to CNN as the Clinton News Network.
And so they
would say, well, you go over there and you're going to get it spun this way. And they realize, you know, if you go over to Fox News, you're going to get it spun a different way. But they don't, I find, at least the circles I run in, they don't hang on every word. They know that some of it is almost entertainment. But what Beck seemed to have zeroed in on was the idea that people didn't know their history very well. So he's been giving these history lessons, which have given some context to where we are today politically. So you would agree that the historical aspect of what Beck is talking about is a good thing for the country. Is that true?
I'm a teacher of history.
Yeah.
What can I say but amen, brother, to that? The history lessons I've seen from Glenn Beck, I would certainly have questions about, but I don't question this idea that it's very important to have a historical context for understanding the current state of things. And, very, very important indeed.
In the book, you talk also about abortion and about kind of in the context of there's a lot of Christians who may be one issue voters. And I just wanted to have a little bit of thought about the idea of abortion, because the way that I view it is that I'm not a one issue, like I'm just not concerned with one issue. I'm concerned with things that you mentioned that you're interested in as well, like the environment and poverty and so forth. But for me, abortion is a disqualifying issue. So that if a person says that they believe in abortion, immediately I just say, well, you're not even, I won't even consider voting for you because that issue is head and shoulders above any other. Do you agree with that?
I think all Christians should vote their consciences. I think I'm in fundamental agreement with what you say there. I can't remember the exact context in which I raised it in the book, but I think it's in the context of thinking about voting. And the point I'm making there is voting is not nuanced. There may be a single issue that simply flips you to one side or the other. But we need to make sure that the way we think about politics is broader than just the way we tick the box in the voting booth. So I don't have any problem with a Christian saying abortion is such a unique issue, it determines the way I vote.
You had said,
what I would like to say is, well, I hope it doesn't mean that you buy into everything that that party says, that you're still willing to think independently and critically about the other issues, even if you can't express that independence of thought when you go into the voting booth.
Mm-hmm. The problem is we're often, there's only two choices, you know?
Yeah.
I know people don't like the term the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
But it comes down to, you got two people to vote for. People say, well, I'm not going to vote for somebody that I don't agree with on all the issues. I say, well, then you might as well go in and vote for yourself because you're never going to find that person that's going to agree with you totally. But you mentioned on Janet Medford's show, you said that you weren't sure that that there would be any fewer abortions if John McCain had gotten elected versus if Barack Obama, since he did get elected. First of all, a couple things. One, I actually had Barack Obama on the program to allow him to speak for himself. And so I'm just saying that to say that I agree with you, that I want to hear this from their own mouth and let them defend it for themselves.
Can I just clarify something there?
Sure.
I didn't actually say I wasn't sure. I think what I said was a question we need to ask is, would there have been any less abortions if John McCain had been elected? And then I went on to say, I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it's a question worth asking.
Okay, because I immediately said that there was a dramatic difference. You know, Barack Obama, right away, the Freedom of Choice Act was the first thing that he passed when he got in. The Mexico City policy about funding abortions overseas. Planned Parenthood has received tons more money. They're even opening up in the malls now. They want to be the lens crafters of reproductive services in the malls. So, you know, abortion in the mall now. It's horrible what is taking place with abortion. So,
I mean, can I actually comment on that as
please
well?
Do,
I think that,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it is an absolute contradiction of what I would call the old historic liberal left, if you like, of 50 or 60 years ago stood for, to do this kind of thing.
Yes.
As I say in the very first chapter of the book, my grandfather was a trade unionist. My grandfather was in Britain a Labour Party man. And for him, that meant speaking up for those who could not speak up for themselves. The fact that the left will not speak up for unborn children is, I think, the most sickening aspect of the modern left and the deepest contradiction, I think, of the left's own history.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I think that we need to make more out of that and say, if you're really concerned about the oppressed and those that don't have a voice, it's absolutely inconsistent then for you not to be pro-life.
Yeah.
I think we can make a compelling case. The idea of just holding up images, again, speaking to your point, the historical Christian response has been, let's just show them these graphic images. That's not good enough. We can make a case as for, you know, why they're inconsistent in their view, and we can make a case for life that is much more compelling than offensive statements and offensive placards.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks very well to the point you're getting to in the book. Let's run to the phone line again really quick. We've got Christopher right here in Greenville up next. Chris, what's on your mind?
Well, am I on?
You are. You're on live.
Okay. All right. I'm a young guy who's been out of Bible school for a couple of years, looking to go to seminary eventually. Right now I'm in a church, kind of like an in-house, you know, practical, getting ready to go out planting ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And say I'm wanting to get ready to maybe someday start looking into politics. First, I'm going to want to read Republicrat because I'm going to want Truman's, you know, base to start off on. But is there any resources that either of you would really recommend to say, hey, you know, for those who are going into the ministry, who are looking to be shepherds and serve their people, and who are maybe one-on-one with their people, are going to be asked, you know, how do I vote in this election? How do I look at these issues? And you want to have a historical, you know, basis behind what you're saying. What's some good books that you would recommend for us to start reading so so that we can start educating ourselves.
Well, let me comment very quickly, and then I'll toss it to Carl to fill in the blanks and answer better than I will. But he talks in the book about, and he talked on the previous interview, about the role of the pastor. I would say first and foremost, from the pulpit, your role is to preach the gospel and to lead the people in worship in the church, and I wouldn't allow your pulpit to be turned into a political action committee meeting or anything that in the church. So I would fight against that first and foremost. That said, though, I would say that the gospel speaks to every single issue that we face, and you should encourage your people to think through these matters and think through them biblically. For instance, like the immigration issue, the Bible has a lot to say about immigration, about how the stranger and the alien was looked at in ancient Israel, and about property rights and things like that. So I think that we can formulate a position on a policy, even like illegal immigration, using the scriptures as a basis to do that. A couple of books that I would recommend. I did an interview here recently on four views of government. It was just about 3 weeks ago or so, but you can go to my website, knowingthetruth.org, look under the audio archives, and you'll see that there. That book would be really good to get a framework of whether you believe in a principle pluralism approach, or you believe in a Christian America approach, or a theonomy approach to government. You have to decide which one of these categories you're in that you feel most comfortable with according to the scriptures, and that would help you have the big picture, and then you can drill down from there. Let me toss it to Carl. Carl, could you hear the question okay?
Yeah, and I agree with everything you've said there. Hi, Christopher. There's a couple of books that I would recommend. They don't all hold the same position, but I think if you read them, they would give you plenty of sort of meat to chew on. One of them is a new book written by two guys who've been involved in politics from a Christian perspective. I think they work for the Bush White House.
That's correct, yes.
Michael Gerson, and I can't remember the other gentleman's name, but the book's entitled City of Man, Religion and Politics in a New Era. I think is an excellent conservative but very, very sane take on the role of Christians in politics. Another book written actually by a Roman Catholic writer, but it's, I think, again offers some very provocative and thoughtful interventions in this, is entitled Politics for Christians by Francis J. Beckwith, and that's published by InterVarsity Press. Mm-hmm. And the third book is just come out from Crossway, and it's entitled Living in God's Two Kingdoms, mm-hmm, by David Van Drunen, which is particularly good on demarcating where the role of the church in direct politics ends and where the role of the civil sphere begins, if you like. So say there are three books which all take slightly different views. But I think if you read them, you'll have plenty to chew over and be able to think through the issues for yourself.
Mm-hmm. You're certainly not alone, Christopher. I think that many preachers are confused as to exactly how they should address these issues without going too far and without making it a huge part of the ministry, and yet still being faithful to the scripture. By the way, the other person's name on that City of Man was Peter, I think it's Werner. It's Wehner, and it's put out by Moody Publishers. Christopher, does that help, Christopher?
That does. I was almost wondering as well, just, you know, say I'm, you know, very new to studying history. Is there like a good introduction just to, you know, good, reliable, something you would say like, this is very accurate, very, you know, unbiased towards towards falsity, and just really helps you get a good grasp of history as you're looking to start learning?
What kind of history?
Really,
what kind of history? American history or church
American history? American history.
What would you recommend, Carl?
I think probably if you're looking for a sort of religious theme going through American history, probably Mark Knowles' America's God would be a good place to start. It's a big, chunky doorstop of a book. But I think that looks at really the role of religion in American life in the 18th, 19th centuries, and would give you a good grounding of for sort of understanding the modern age.
Excellent. And Peter Lilbeck stuff there that we've been talking about. Peter, obviously some of his stuff, he's got that Sacred Fire about George Washington. That's excellent. You know, he did a lot of research on that. That's to use Carl's term, a big, chunky book as well.
Seems and, bigger and chunkier, that one.
It'll definitely stop a big door. And so you can that would be helpful. And probably out on Peter, he's got The Wall of Misconception. That's an excellent book, just thinking about the separation of church and state and that entire issue. Yeah. He's done a really good job on that. Let me tell you, Chris, you also get a copy of this book if you just send me an email, kevin@knowingthetruth.org. I'll send you a free copy of Carl Truman's book that we're discussing here today.
Well, hey, thank you so much. And if I can say thank you so very much, guys, I do appreciate it. And I mean, even this is just a testimony to Carl, but Carl, I don't know if you remember, but I actually wrote you an email a while ago about a Minority Report article that you had in Thermopolis, and you wrote a very gracious reply. And all I can say is thank you for your contribution to the church, and may Christ increase your ministry, brother.
Praise the Lord.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, praise the Lord. Carl has got an excellent reputation. Obviously, he writes a lot out on Reformation 21, which is associated with the confessing evangelicals. And so I highly recommend that folks go there to read some of his other blog posts and follow their stuff very closely. Derek Thomas has been with me on the program before. And, of course, we also promote the PCRT. Comes right here to Greenville, going to be coming again this upcoming year, and so we're looking forward to that as well. Carl, I wanted to mention just a couple of other segments. We're down to the last couple of minutes on the broadcast, and we're not going to be able to obviously get through everything that you write here in this book. But let me tell people a couple of the segments that are in here. Better yet, let me just ask you to just tell them what they would find in the rest of the book besides a couple of the things that we talked about so far.
Yeah, well, I'll just run through the sort of the structure of the book. As I say, the first chapter is really where I take the left to task for having abandoned its care for the dispossessed and the poor. In the second chapter, entitled The Slipperiness of Secularization, I raise the question of that as a church, we always need to be very careful that we're not allowing the gospel to become secularized, that we're not merely using gospel language to express secular values. And I zero in on there on sort of prosperity doctrine teachers. Mm. It's a great example of the gospel becoming identified with material concerns. Mm. The third chapter, I offer my critique of Fox News, whether an accurate one or an inaccurate one, I let the reader decide. In the fourth chapter, I talk about the free market and capitalism, and I make the point that, you know, it is clearly at this point in history the best way to organize society, but we need to be careful that we don't identify it as the end of history, as some sort of anticipation of the eschaton, if you like, that every era has identified its own organization with the end of time, and every era so far has been proved wrong. So we need to remain modest and hold these things lightly. In the fifth chapter, I look at the fact that voting always involves a trade-off. As you've already said, you can never vote for a candidate who perfectly reflects all your beliefs, and we have to accept that there is a degree of pragmatism in the way we vote. And then in the final chapter, I talk really about the need for civility and for critical thought in these things. Mm-hmm. And I guess underlying all of them is one of the things I find great about being a Christian is, you know, Matthew 16 tells me that the church is the meaning of history, that we've won. We're not there yet, but we will ultimately win. Mm-hmm. And that really relativizes everything. It means that whether the Democrats retain control today or whether the Republicans sweep the House, whatever happens, this is small potatoes compared to the fact that at the end of time, the church has won. And knowing that God has promised that the church will win, I think gives us a considerable amount of liberty and allows us to sit fairly loosely on politics, that we need to keep it in proportion and perspective.
Well said. I totally agree with that. I think people, what gets them disturbed is the details. While we know that God is in control, we believe in the sovereignty of God, I think many people do see the big issue. But I think that they also understand that God not only ordains the end, but he ordains the means.
Yeah.
And they're wondering, are they doing what is pleasing to God in the means? You know, are they looking at these issues? And what I take away from your book is that we need to really engage our mind. There is a certain sense of anti-intellectualism in the church today, and we need to engage our mind in thinking about these issues and thinking biblically. And your book just points out to me, once again, the need for us to do that and call our folks to do that as well. Carl, this has been very interesting book. I really appreciate the work that you do there at Ref 21 and your other roles as well. But thank you very much for taking the time out to be with us on the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
It's been a pleasure for me to spend time with you, Kim.
Okay, thank you very much. That was Carl Truman. Carl, again, is the professor of historical theology and church history at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia. And the name of the book that we've been talking about is called Republicrat, Confessions of a Liberal Conservative. And the foreword is by Peter Lilback, a number of endorsements on the back here from Derek Thomas, as I was talking about here earlier. And so I think you'll find it very helpful. You may not agree with it, but it'll make you think about what you think concerning politics. And from that aspect, I think it's a very, very good book for that purpose. Let me just say that working on a couple of other broadcasts. In fact, I was in some conversation today with having John Bolton, Ambassador John Bolton, is maybe on with me next week on the program. Talk a little bit about the UN. So that's one we got looking forward to. Tomorrow on the broadcast, we'll be talking about the election results with some folks from World Magazine as well as from the American Enterprise Institute. And so you don't want to miss that. We'll see you again tomorrow. Remember, Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley.